It smashed to pieces when it hit. And here come the sharks. They're tearing into it. Ugh, it's not a pleasant sight. Now I'm looking at the plane. There's a bulldozer that seems to have broken down. It's going round and round in circles. Now a couple of crabs are tearing into it, pulling it to pieces. Skipper, I think you'd better get back right away.
Believe me, Norton said with deep feeling. We are coming just as quickly as we can.
Rama was battening down the hatches, like a ship preparing for a storm. That was Norton's overwhelming impression, though he could not have put it on a logical basis. He no longer felt completely rational. Two compulsions were warring in his mind, the need to escape, and the desire to obey those bolts of lightning that flashed across the sky, ordering him to join the Bayats in their march to the sea. One more section of stairway. Another 10-minute pause to let the fatigue poisons drain from his muscles. Then on again. Another 2 kilometers to go, but better not to think about that. The maddening sequence of descending whistles abruptly ceased. At the same moment, the fireballs racing along the slots of the straight valleys stopped their seaward strobing. Rama's 6 linear suns were once more continuous bands of light. But they were fading fast, and sometimes they flickered as if tremendous jolts of energy were being drained from waning power sources. From time to time there were slight tremors underfoot. The bridge reported that Rama was still swinging with imperceptible slowness, like a compass needle responding to a weak magnetic field. This was perhaps reassuring. It was when Rama stopped its swing that Norton would really begin to worry. All the Bayats had gone, so Rousseau reported. In the whole interior of Rama, the only movement was that of human beings, crawling with painful slowness up the curving face of the North Dome. Norton had long since overcome the vertigo he had felt on that first ascent, but now a new fear was beginning to creep into his mind. They were so vulnerable here, on this endless climb from plane to hub. Suppose that Rama, when it had completed its attitude change, started to accelerate. Presumably its thrust would be along the axis. If it was in the southward direction, that would be no problem. They would be held a little more firmly against the slope they were ascending. But if it was toward the north, they might be swept off into space, to fall back eventually on the plain far below. He tried to reassure himself with the thought that any possible acceleration would be very feeble. Dr. Pereira's calculations had been most convincing. Rama could not possibly accelerate at more than 1/50th of a gravity, or the cylindrical sea would climb the southern cliff and flood an entire continent. But Pereira had been in a comfortable study back on Earth, not with kilometers of overhanging metal apparently about to crash down upon his head. And perhaps Rama was designed for periodic flooding. No, that was ridiculous. It was absurd to imagine that all these trillions of tons could suddenly start moving with sufficient acceleration to shake him loose. Nevertheless, for the remainder of the ascent, Norton never let himself get far from the security of the handrail. Lifetimes later, the stairway ended. Only a few 100 meters of vertical, recessed ladder were left. It was no longer necessary to climb this section, since one man at the hub, hauling on a cable, could easily hoist another against the rapidly diminishing gravity. Even at the bottom of the ladder, a man weighed less than 5 kilos. At the top, virtually zero. So Norton relaxed in the sling. grasping a rung from time to time to counter the feeble Coriolis force trying to push him off the ladder. He almost forgot his knotted muscles as he had his last view of Rama. It was about as bright now as the light of a full moon on Earth. The overall scene was perfectly clear, but he could no longer make out the finer details. The South Pole was now partially obscured by a glowing mist. Only the peak of Bighorn protruded through it, a small, black dot, seen exactly head-on. The carefully mapped but still unknown continent beyond the sea was the same apparently random patchwork that it had always been. It was too foreshortened and too full of complex detail to reward visual examination, and Norton scanned it only briefly. He swept his gaze around the encircling band of the sea and noticed for the first time a regular pattern of disturbed water, as if waves were breaking over reefs set at geometrically precise intervals. Rama's maneuvering was having some effect, but a slight one. He was sure that Sergeant Barnes would have sailed forth happily under these conditions had he asked her to cross the sea in her lost resolution. New York, London, Paris, Moscow, Rome. He said farewell to all the cities of the Northern Hemisphere and hoped the Ramans would forgive him for the damage he had done. Perhaps they would understand that it was all in the cause of science. Then, finally, he was at the hub, and eager hands reached out to grab him and to hurry him through the airlocks. His overstrained legs and arms were trembling so uncontrollably that he was almost unable to help himself, and he was content to be handled like a half-paralyzed invalid. The sky of Rama contracted above him as he descended into the central crater of the hub. When the door of the inner airlock shut off the view forever, he found himself thinking, "How strange that night should be falling, now that Rama is closest to the sun."